Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. 5 minutes past 10 o'clock, and we welcome the governor of the state of New York, Andrew Cuomo, to discuss the topics of the day with Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Uh-huh. I think I hear you. Governor, tell me, and I ask this because you are a senior leader in the United States, and this is on everybody's tongues this morning. Is it possible we have a Manchurian candidate in the White House right now?
First, you hear me, doctor, when you want to hear me. It's called selective hearing.
True, all true.
Look, I think what is, I am not overly shocked by this president's actions. I am shocked that people seem continually shocked. You know, human nature tends to be a pattern, and the pattern tends to repeat. What this president has decided is he's appealing to a very small base of people who elected him in a crowded primary field for president. And they were the most conservative, radically conservative people in the country. And he is continuing to court them. Obviously, this whole issue with the wall, common sense, you could solve this in 11 seconds. Democrats are not against border security. They voted for border security. You have to have border security. Otherwise, you don't have an entrance if everything is open.
Yeah. But I asked a question, a specific question, Governor, respectfully, of course, as always. Do you think it's possible that we have a paid agent of the Russians in the White House?
You know, I think we'll get the facts when Mueller puts out his report. I think anything is possible in this world and in this current milieu. But I don't want to start to fuel conspiracy theories. Let's just separate issues. We'll have a Mueller report. Let them give it to the public. Deal with that then. And in the meantime, deal with the governmental issues, which are complicated enough, doctor, without spinning a conspiratorial web around them.
Yes, but when I first asked you the question, I said to you, you think it's possible, and you said, I'm not surprised. Didn't you say something like that?
Well, I said, I'm not surprised by anything that could happen here with this president. But I do believe we are in a really dangerous period in this country, which, by the way, is why I think the state's actions are more important than ever before. But I don't want to delve into possible conspiracy theories. They only complicate the governmental. Let's deal with one set at a time. And you're going to have the Mueller report. If he is a paid agent, if his family's a paid agent, if he employed paid agents, you'll find out. So let's not speculate. Let's try to resolve what we can.
Now, I have a large question for you, but I want you to answer it very quickly because I got about 3,000 things I got to ask you here. So tomorrow you got the State of the State / budget address. And why are you doing it now instead of the end of the month?
This is a different time than we've ever been in, right? Government is a moment in time. You respond to the circumstances. The modality I've used here is I laid out an agenda in early December of legislative priorities. I then did an inaugural address where I laid out priorities. This budget is going to be complicated. I want the legislature to have the facts sooner than later. So I already laid out the legislative agenda. I want to lay out the budget agenda because the two interconnect. You know, this theory of, well, I'll do policy and then we'll talk about budget. It doesn't really work, Alan.
Right. No, you're right about that. Okay, so one of the things I'm particularly interested in is your raise of the age of tobacco purchases from 20 to 21 from 18. Why is this important?
It is important because hopefully the older we get, the wiser we get. We've learned more about tobacco and the dangers of tobacco. Yes, 18 years old, you're mature and you're given responsibilities.
You can fight in the wars.
Yes, but we know this can kill you. And if we can help our young people to make a decision when they are a little more wise, a little more mature, because this is something that can kill you. Let's be honest. And the more we know, the more certain we are. And it's also a tremendous, besides the moral and ethical saving lives, it's a tremendous cost to the public. And I know 18-year-olds will say, I don't need you to tell me. I just went through that with three 18-year-olds. So I get it. But I think those few years, you're a little smarter, you're a little wiser, there's a little less peer pressure, and I think we'll save lives.
Don't you open up a black market by doing that? I mean, we've been watching that with marijuana.
Look, you have that now anyway, right? I don't want to give my kids more information than I need to prove my hypocrisy. There are kids buying cigarettes now who are not 18. Let's be honest.
Two wrongs don't make a right. Anyway, so then I want to move on to the plastic bag ban. Now, we have that. We're way ahead of New York in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, where we have not only marijuana pot shops, but we also have a ban on plastic bags. What took you so long?
What took me so long? You are a provocative doctor. I tried and failed in the past. I want to try and succeed this time. To me, it is a common sense issue. It's degrading of the environment. It's expensive. It's polluting our waterways. It's polluting our urban areas, our landscape. And it's unnecessary. It's just one of those things that are unnecessary. We can provide renewable bags. We can do it without cost. Mm-hmm. Expensive, ugly, dangerous, ruins the environment, and it's purely unnecessary.
When I walk out of the supermarket, quite frequently I pay an extra penny for my paper bag, quite frequently doesn't do the job. What is to be said about that? I mean, no.
I will give you personally a heavy-duty
bag.
But
I can't remember
that will do the job.
Yeah, I know.
You bring it to the store, use it, you bring it home, you bring it back to the store.
But I never remember.
And by the way.
Yeah.
And by the way, I bagged a lot of groceries in my day, and back in the day, we only had paper bags. Okay, you double bagged. But generations somehow figured it out, Doctor.
Well, I voted for it, Great Barrington. Okay, so now Republicans in the Senate have long blocked the Child Victims Act, and you're going to be promoting that in Tuesday's speech. Is there a good reason to listen to the GOP on this issue? And exactly, remind everybody what it is.
There is no good reason. Justice is justice. If you could argue that this was the cruelest intrusion and violation of justice. These are people who were in authority in the position of moral responsibility, many of them religious members, clergy members, who sexually abused children. We have a statute of limitations that limits the amount of time that a person could bring an action. In general, the statute of limitations, I think, has a lot of merit to it. But these are special circumstances where you had children who didn't want to come forward, whose parents didn't want them to come forward, who were embarrassed, who were confused. This was a religious leader in the community. And they've lived with this pain for decades. And what they're saying is it's partially about the economics, but I think it's more about the vindication for people who were violated, for society to say, I acknowledge that you were violated and that justice was not done, and you deserve justice. Marriage equality that we passed, most people said it was about marriage. It was about equality. It was about LGBTQ members who said, why is my love judged by society as less significant than heterosexual love? I'm just as much of a person and my love is just as valid. These are people saying, I was violated. All right, it was a priest, it was a this, it was a that. I was violated. And society won't acknowledge it.
So why do the Republicans in the Senate say no all of these times? Have you ever talked to them about it? What do they say when you're
Oh, I've talked to them many times about
what
it.
What
They've
do they
raised
say?
The economic consequences.
You mean towards the church?
Well, this could be financially detrimental to a church, for example. I understand that. But I also understand what Pope Francis says, who is adamant on this issue. And Pope Francis says the civil courts should handle these issues. That's Pope Francis. I'm a Catholic. I'm a former altar boy. I'm going with the Pope on this one.
So, when you said that to the Republicans, they said back to you, you're going to kill the church, and you're a Catholic, and I know your dad because I went through that with him at the time. Some of the Catholic hierarchy got very angry at him. Are you experiencing any of that?
Oh, I've experienced that all my political life. I experienced that when I said a woman had a right to choose. I've experienced that at an exponential level when New York was the first large state to pass marriage equality against the Catholic Church. So they've been against me on all of these issues.
How bad
they were my father, by the way. Remember, they threatened to excommunicate my father.
Well,
and excommunication
I
was very bad, by the way. You can't get into heaven if you were excommunicated.
Especially if you believe that, and I believe your father did. But there was one bishop who said down in the Hudson Valley, if I remembered, front page of the Post, you'll burn in hell. That's pretty strong stuff.
Yeah, well, look, I'm sure that I know there are priests who say that about me. They said it about me for a woman's right to choose, for marriage equality. And I'm sure there'll be priests who say it about me for this. Only problem with that threat is once you know you're going to burn in hell, doctor, you may as well do the right thing.
It's cold out there. So here's my question. You know, there are those in the legislature who now want to make the property tax, your property tax, permanent. Is that a good idea?
I think making the property tax cap permanent is a very good idea, especially when you have property tax owners now who are under assault because they just lost the federal deductibility of the property tax. As you know, property tax by far and away is the highest tax in the state, much higher than the state income tax. I think we're in danger of losing people from this state because of the cost of property tax. We have one of the highest property taxes in the nation. So to the extent we can say to people, we have a 2% cap, it's going to stay a 2% cap, and feel confident in staying in this state, I think it's very important. The people who tend to be against the property tax cap, not coincidentally, are from the areas that don't have a high property tax. But if you're from Long Island, if you're from upstate, upstate pays the highest property taxes in the country as a percentage of home value. It matters. New York City, the property taxes are not as onerous. So I think people from New York City don't feel it the same way representatives from Long Island or upstate New York feel it.
The New York POST, otherwise known as the Post, has you on the front page, a caricature with your hand on a subway car saying, "The buck doesn't stop here. Governor demands full MTA control, wants city to pay half." So your answer?
My answer is this. The MTA was put together to avoid any liability for any elected official. It was Machiavellian the way they did it. Why? Because these fares go up and no politician wants to be blamed for fares or poor operation. So the governor got some appointments and the mayor got some appointments.
Well, you got most of them.
Yeah,
well, you got six of them, right?
Yeah, let's
and
get,
that's the most.
Let's do facts.
I'm doing facts.
Six out of 14.
Yeah, but everything
and
else is divided up.
Yeah. Here's the caveat.
Yeah.
The mayor of the city of New York can unilaterally veto the capital budget of the subway system. The speaker of the assembly can unilaterally veto. The Senate leader can unilaterally veto, which means you can get something passed by the board. And then you have a unilateral veto that can't even be overridden, by the way. Nobody's in charge. And look, doctor, you know me a long time.
I do.
I have taken on projects that no politician would go near. I've taken on construction projects that were stalled for years. I believe it's my job to take on the tough projects, but I'm not going to assume responsibility without the authority. I'm not going to say I'm responsible for the MTA. But by the way, if the Senate leader, John Flanagan, old Senate leader, decided he wanted to play politics, he could veto the whole plan and there was nothing I could do about it. Or the assembly speaker, or the mayor. It was designed this way. So nobody's responsible. The fare went up. Who did it? Who knows? I am willing to assume responsibility, but I'm not doing it without authority.
What's the likelihood you'll get that authority, Governor?
It's up to them. It's up to them. If they want to keep this mess, then let them keep doing what they're doing. But I'm going to make it clear that the people know that it is continuing because that's what the political forces want. You know, who's in charge now? The bureaucracy is in charge. Okay. And it runs as a bureaucracy, and there's no accountability. We had a Board of Education in New York City. And the point was, it's an amorphous board. Everybody's on the board, and nobody knows who's in charge. Give the mayor control. I supported it. It was under Mayor Bloomberg.
Yep.
Why? Because somebody should be in charge. When everyone is in charge, no one is in charge. And this is a lot of garbage. Well, the governor has six. Yeah, I have six of 14. I didn't do new math, but six of 14 is not a majority, and I've never heard of a system where a board acts and then four people can unilaterally veto those actions on the capital plan, which is the most important piece. And by the way, nobody even knows they can. You did not know that the speaker and the Senate leader and the mayor and the governor could veto the board, did you?
How did you know I didn't know?
I heard it in your voice. I heard it when I said it, and you said, "Oh, geez, I'm supposed to be the good doctor," and I didn't know.
What do you think about Senator Gillibrand setting up a presidential headquarters in Troy?
I'm glad it's in Troy. You know, this presidential election is going to be a reflection of the times. There's going to be a lot of people who want their voice heard, and that's what makes democracy democracy. and we'll see how it plays out.
And now, I have a personal favor to ask of you, of course. That shouldn't do it, but I live in Great Barrington. We're going to get a lot of taxes out of the four pot shops that we're going to have. Four. And, you know, you guys are stalling here. The more you stall in New York State, the more taxes that'll come to downtown Great Barrington. Don't you see?
Yeah. Well, don't spend the money, because I'm going to propose tomorrow, and that's one of the reasons. We have it in New Jersey. We have it in Massachusetts. So it's not really a question anymore of should you do it. We're sort of past that bridge. It was like casinos. We were surrounded by casinos, but we sat here in New York and said, well, we deny that they exist. The recreational sale of marijuana is here.
But you see, you, sir, said right from the beginning that there was some real danger. Somebody might crash into somebody when they're high. Well, how can you change just on the basis that you need the money?
I didn't, and those weren't the facts. The fact was I did have trepidations about it, and I impaneled a panel of experts, Department of Health, State Police, people who are expert in the area. They said there are risks, but the benefits outweigh the risks. So it's not for the money. The benefits outweigh the risks. It has to be regulated. We're going to regulate it in this state. We think it could raise about $300 million in revenue, depending on how it works. $300 million does not make us or break us, as you know. So it's not just about the money. It is about the revenue. More for me, it's about the regulation and making sure that we protect young people. That's why we said an age of 21 years old. We gave local governments the ability to opt out if they want, so they could do that. But it's the regulation and the protection. And to the extent we're going to create economic opportunity, getting that economic opportunity to the poor communities that paid the price, rather than having these rich corporations come in and having another payday.
I only got 3 minutes, but what else do you want to tell us about your state of the state budget? What's going to say make us say, golly, gee whiz, Martha, what's that about?
I think you're going to see the most aggressive agenda that I have put forward. Why? Because I now have the ability to get it passed with a Democratic Senate where I had a Republican Senate. I also think this is a moment in time where the federal government is totally dysfunctional and the state has to step in. Reproductive Health Act, protect a woman's right to choose. I want a constitutional amendment. I don't trust the politics and the pendulum anymore. Right. I want to see it written into the Constitution. Allowing people to vote. Why do the polls in upstate New York open at noon for primaries?
That's
and
crazy.
Downstate, they open at 6 a.m.?
That ain't fair.
Let's fix these crazy irregularities and injustices that have existed for so long. We have a Democratic Senate, Democratic Assembly, Democratic governor. Let's not make the mistakes of 2009, which was a debacle, and let's flip it on its head and have the greatest progressive accomplishments in 100 days that this state has ever seen.
Okay, now I got a minute, but the boss of the assembly, some people, me, I call him Boss Hasty because he's boss of the Bronx First, now is saying, you know, he seems to be angry with you over the pay raise situation. Are you having a fight? Do you talk on the phone? What's going on?
Yeah, look, this is not, if you get emotional, you shouldn't be in this business, right? Because it does a disservice to the public. The speaker is unhappy about the pay raise. He's made that clear. The legislators got a $50,000 pay raise, but a ban on outside income and a reduction in the number of Lulus. He said that he's unhappy with the commission that made the selection, because I didn't do it. We had a commission that we all agreed to, of controllers, Bill Thompson, Carmichael, Tom DiNapoli, and Scott Stringer. But he is unhappy about the ban on pay raises The ban on outside income and the reduction in Lulus. But I'm sure he's a professional. And look, in this business, there's not a day that goes by that I'm not disappointed with something I didn't get.
You're terrific for being with us. We so appreciate it, Governor. Keep on coming back as long as you can stand it. And in the meantime, thanks for being here with us.
Thank you for hearing me, Doctor, when you choose.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.